Everywhere we look around us in nature, we find thousands of examples of logical design and purpose. And it is only logical to assume that where we find logical design and purpose, that there must have been a logical designer or purposer. And of course, Christians would call that God, a God who created us and also wants to save us as well. Many examples are possible. We only have a few moments for just a few quick ones. But as we look around us in nature, we find that things are so miraculous and so incredible that Dr. Wernher von Braun, the father of the modern American day space program, we find that even though he was a brilliant engineer, he was stunned by everything that he saw around him. And he said, and I quote, "Anything as well ordered as is our Earth and universe must have had a maker, a master designer. Anything so orderly, so perfect, so precisely balanced, so majestic as this creation can only be the product of a divine idea. There must be a maker. There can be no other way." So you see, true science does point to a creator, and many, many scientists do believe in creation. Many believe in evolution, but it's been my experience that many people believe in evolution because they simply have not become acquainted with the miracles of nature and how God's world points to God's word. Let's take, for example, something that many people find to be very beautiful, a peacock feather. Charles Darwin, the famous evolutionary scientist, he was a brilliant man, but in my own personal opinion, he was a man who simply, he had an attitude with regard to God that God really wasn't that necessary, and therefore he had to believe in the theory of evolution. Charles Darwin, though, had a tough time believing in evolution. For example, Darwin said that every time he looked at a peacock, it made him sick. Now, why would looking at a beautiful peacock make a person sick? Unless, of course, they were allergic. Well, he wasn't allergic. The reason that peacocks made him sick is because he could not figure out how a beautiful peacock feather evolved from frayed, ripped-up lizard scales. Yes, that is the current theory with regard to the theory of evolution, is that somehow reptilian scales eventually became frayed in some fashion and became highly intricate and very, very beautiful bird feathers. Well, obviously this idea does stretch the imagination a little bit, doesn't it? Bird feathers are very complicated. They come in all sorts of different types and shapes and functions, and aesthetically speaking, they come in all sorts of patterns and colors. Indeed, birds had the first Velcro. You know, we've been using Velcro now for the past few years, and we use Velcro for all kinds of things. Velcro comes in very handy. The extremely expensive shoes that young people like to wear now, those tennis shoes, especially in the inflatable ones, many of them use Velcro straps. We're very proud of this invention of Velcro, but the fact of the matter is, folks, birds have been using Velcro in their feathers for thousands of years. If somebody would say that Velcro just happened, we'd say they were silly. An engineer invented Velcro. But, folks, people nevertheless say that bird feathers just happened by accident and chance, that mutation and natural selection through evolution created beautiful bird feathers. And I have to admit, from a personal standpoint, that I find this rather hard to believe. In fact, the miracle of life itself is hard to believe, and how living things ever came to be able to fly. In fact, evolution tells us that flight not only evolved by accident once, but it evolved four times. Not only did birds learn how to fly, but mammals, that is, bats, learned how to fly. Reptiles, that is, pteranodons and pterodactyls, learned how to fly. And, of course, insects learned how to fly. Well, men haven't been able to fly until since 1903. So how is it that man, with his genius, hasn't been able to fly until then, and yet animals have been flying for thousands of years? Well, obviously, somebody designed those creatures to be able to fly, didn't he? And that somebody, again, of course, was God. Well, I wish we could say a lot more about birds and what have you, because they are so beautiful and so amazing. But as we look around us in nature, we find other things, and speaking of things that do fly, that brings us to the matter of the lowly bee and the beehive. Charles Darwin said that every time he looked at a beehive, it made him panic. Well, they make me panic too, but for different reasons. Darwin wasn't afraid of being stung. It's just that Darwin could not figure out how a, well, rather ignorant little bee learned how to build a highly complicated beehive. The hexagonal construction of the beehive has been found to be the absolute ideal in terms of stress engineering and strongest engineering design, as well as economy of material. And in fact, the bottom of each cell of the beehive is always at an angle of 70 degrees, 32 minutes, which again, of course, has been found to be absolutely ideal. The construction of the beehive, in fact, has been found to be so ideal that now most modern jet aircraft have within their wings a hexagonal magnesium honeycomb construction. You see here the sides of the hexagonal cells. The hexagonal cells themselves will be facing you here on the wing surface. This is from a jet cargo plane. And engineers have been doing this kind of construction now for about the last 30 years, I'm told. And I'm told that it is the absolute ideal construction for an airplane wing to be very strong and yet very, very light. Well, we've only been doing this for a few decades. Bees, they've been doing it for thousands of years. Somebody taught those bees how to do this, didn't they? More can be said, obviously, about bees and the beehive. But another miracle of nature that I find to be very intriguing must be because just the other day I got in my mail this catalog. And this entire catalog is filled with nothing but odds and ends dealing with whales. Whales are incredible. As you know, they swim like fish, but they're not fish. Of course, they're mammals. And they're not submarines, and yet they can outdo some of our finest submarines. We have a real fascination with whales right now, and with good reason. Well, needless to say, for evolution, it's tough to explain how whales came to be. The most common, most popular theory concerning the origin of whales is that whales, or cetaceous creatures, came from canines, or dog-like creatures. Another theory says they came from cow-like creatures. Well, I have to admit, I find this idea rather hard to believe. Besides all the obvious problems in how a dog or a cow could possibly have evolved into a whale, we have the problem of the location of the nostril. Now, as you know, on dogs or cows, the nostrils are located at the front, aren't they? At the anterior end. However, on whales and on dolphins or porpoises, we find that the nostrils or the blowholes, they're not in the front, are they? They're on the dorsal side. They are on the top of the head of the whale. No fossil evidence has been found to really show how on earth the nose started out here and wound up on the back of his brain instead. In fact, one scientist I heard of recently, he said that it's pretty hard to believe how this might have happened. He said that as the dog was trying to evolve into a whale, migrating that nose backward like that, every time he would sneeze, he would blow his brains out. Creationists note that this seems to be another indication that the whale must have been created. He couldn't simply have evolved by chance or by accident. And that's why, again, creationists say that if you want to teach evolution in public school, that's fine, but it should be taught strictly as an unproven theory. As we've said before, for something to be a proven fact in science, it has to be observable and repeatable and testable and falsifiable. This is not true with evolution. It's not true with creation either. But many, many scientists have now concluded that it makes a lot more sense to believe in creation than it does to believe in evolution. Now, from time to time, though, I keep hearing about how whales must have evolved. This is a piece of fossilized whale bone that you see right here. It's been cut and polished on one side. And one of the most common ideas I hear about this is that whales must have evolved from land animals because we find these bones or flanges in their flippers. This proves that they must have walked on land at one time. Well, this simply isn't the case. Those flanges aren't even remotely connected to the whale's backbone, not at all whatsoever. The whale has these flanges because his flippers are so large he has to have support. Now, if you want an extremely graphic and very, very clear-cut idea as to why you don't necessarily have to believe that flanges must have been connected to the backbone in some way, we could talk about the male reproductive organ of whales as well as those of baboons and walruses. I have here with me not a whale baculum, because whale baculums can be up to 4 feet long. This is a walrus baculum. This is a bone, it's ivory, that is used to support the male reproductive organ of a walrus. It is not connected to the walrus's backbone in any way, obviously, is it? It is simply used to support the extremely long and heavy male reproductive organ of the walrus. And likewise with whales, they have, in some cases, 4-foot-long baculums used to support their male reproductive organ. Nobody would think that that was ever connected to the whale's backbone as a fifth leg. And yet, if you use that kind of logic, well, then perhaps we can conclude that the phalanges were used to support the whale's flippers and were once connected to his backbone. But obviously that's not the case, is it? Well, if time permitted, we could say a lot more about whales. They are incredible. But let's say a word about one of my favorite creatures, and that being the woodpecker. I wish we had a woodpecker with us to show you, but we don't. So what we're going to do instead is simply bring a piece of wood. And, of course, that's what woodpeckers like to peck on. That's why they have their name, woodpecker. Woodpeckers are a miracle. They have 8 unusual characteristics, all of which are necessary for their survival. They have a very unusual beak, neck, skull, tail feathers, claws, etc. And they have to have all 8 of these characteristics, otherwise they would beat their brains out. How did the woodpecker know to evolve these 8 characteristics? How did he survive until he got them? We can document for you that these are questions that brilliant, well-meaning evolutionary scientists cannot satisfactorily answer. In fact, everything in our programs does come from recent secular evolutionary scientists, because we want to be perfectly objective when talking about the miracles of nature and in demonstrating how they must have been created. More could be said about woodpeckers, but time not permitting, we need to move on to another type of bird. I have with us here a compass and an ordinary clock. As far as the clock is concerned, we find that many creatures in nature have clocks. Now, nobody would ever think that this clock just happened by accident or by chance. Clocks are fairly complicated things. In fact, Sir Isaac Newton was talking to a skeptical friend, and his friend agreed that somebody must have made the watch at which he was looking. Newton said, "You're right, somebody made that watch." But Newton said, "The universe is much more complicated than that watch is. If somebody made the watch, somebody must have made the universe." And that somebody, of course, again, well, it would seem to be true that it was God that was responsible for the universe. But also, God made a lot of watches and a lot of clocks. Many creatures have clocks within them. The fiddler crab, for example, knows exactly when it is high tide and low tide because he has an internal clock. It doesn't matter where you put him, you can put him in a laboratory. He knows when the tide is going to be. He changes color and scurries away when the tide changes. Other creatures have clocks, including what's known as the Arctic tern. He not only has an internal clock, but the Arctic tern also has a little compass. Many creatures have little compasses in their heads, and so far we've never really been able to figure out for sure how on earth this compass came to be. But each year the Arctic tern, without error, manages to fly over 10,000 miles as he migrates north and south each year. He doesn't make mistakes. How can this be? We haven't learned how to navigate like this until just recently. In our modern airplanes, we have what's called INS, the Inertial Navigational System, but Arctic terns have had it for thousands of years. Nobody would say that the INS navigational system just happened by accident or chance, and certainly it didn't happen by accident or chance with the Arctic tern and other creatures as well. Somebody engineered those birds to be that way, didn't they? Life itself, though, is a real miracle. Let's turn once again here to our microscope. Our microscope is the only way that we have of looking at these tiny things. Our human bodies, as you probably know, are made up of billions of tiny cells. Each of our tiny cells, in turn, are made up of thousands of what's called protein molecules. Here we have an ordinary box of cereal, and every box of cereal is going to tell us how much protein it has in it. Some obviously have more than others. Somebody told me the other day that sometimes the cardboard of the box has more protein in it than the cereal does. But at any rate, here we have one of my favorite cereals, and it has a good deal of protein in it. But at any rate, each cell of our body, about 200 billion of them, have thousands of protein molecules, and each of these protein molecules, in turn, have thousands of amino acid molecules. Now, before we get too technical, let's stop right here. What are the chances of a super simple 100 amino acid protein molecule evolving by accident from some carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and phosphorus? According to the very best evolutionary estimates I've ever been able to find, you'd be looking at approximately a 1 out of a 1 with 321 zeros after it. Absolutely astronomical, isn't it? Now, we're not talking about a living thing. It would be far more complicated for a living thing to evolve, a single cell to evolve. We're just talking about a protein molecule, a very simple protein molecule, which makes up each cell of our bodies. Indeed, the chances of a single, super simple 100 amino acid protein molecule evolving from these chemicals, well, the chances are so slim that we are told it would be much easier for a chimpanzee to type out the complete works of Shakespeare than it would be for this to happen. Experts in anatomy and physiology tell us that the human body is a real miracle of engineering design. Men have never been able to come even close to being able to duplicate the eye or any other feature of the body. And speaking of the eye, we have with us here a small model of an eye. Charles Darwin, the famous evolutionary scientist, admitted that every time he looked at an eye, it made him cold all over. Why? Well, he had no idea how the eye could possibly have evolved through mutation and natural selection. And it's understandable that he'd be very confused about how the eye could evolve, because frankly, well, it stretches the boundaries of imagination, doesn't it? The eye is an incredible piece of engineering. Men have never been able to duplicate the eye, especially in terms of its size. The eye has dozens of types of features, each one of which would be totally useless without all the rest. To think that all these features could evolve all at once, simultaneously, and work perfectly all together through an accidental process of evolution, well, it just doesn't seem terribly reasonable. That's why a great many scientists, a growing number of them, in fact, believe that the eye was created. That it is the project, of miraculous engineering design. For example, in the retina, or the back of the eye, there are over 137 million rods and cones, or light receptors. And these are connected to the brain with over 10 million nerve cells. We haven't even come close to being able to build anything quite as incredible as the eye. Even the finest camera, no matter what it might be, no matter if it's German or Japanese or American, no camera has ever been constructed to do what the eye can do. Now, if I were to tell you that I had a box full of camera parts and I were to begin to shake up these parts, rattle them around, no matter how long I were to shake this box of parts, would you think that I would ever be able to accidentally build a camera in this fashion? Well, of course not. You would say I was joking with you, wouldn't you? And you'd be absolutely right. It isn't going to happen, no matter how long we might shake these parts. This camera is not going to come together, because a camera, of course, was engineered by some very, very intelligent people. Well, folks, the eye is much more complicated than the finest camera. If somebody made the camera, somebody must have made the first eye. And that somebody, of course, must have been the creator. Well, the eye, however, would be basically, well, pretty worthless, unless the eye were in conjunction with the most marvelous computer in the entire universe, and that is the human brain. Dr. Isaac Asimov is one of the world's greatest evolutionary scientists. A brilliant man, he has a PhD in biochemistry. And even though he is an evolutionary scientist and believes that there is no creator, he nevertheless admits that the brain is the most complicated 3-pound bit of matter in the universe. Nothing has ever been built by man to duplicate what the brain can do. Not even the finest computer has ever been designed that can do what our human mind is capable of, especially in terms of creativity. Now, I'll grant you, if you look at the brain, it doesn't look like much, does it? It has a rather ugly, pinkish, yellowish, grayish color to it. And has all these convolutions to it. It looks sort of like a prune. It isn't very pretty. It does weigh about 3 pounds and is about the size of a softball. And it has a rather disgusting, moist, sticky feel to it in terms of its texture. But again, the brain is really something. We are told that the brain has over 13 million neurons in it. An incredible number of highly complicated nerve cells that go together to make our brain what it really is. Now, just as we were talking about the eye, so it is with the brain. If I were to take a bunch of computer parts and shake them around, the chances of a brain coming together, well, would be absolutely impossible. And likewise with a Macintosh or Apple or IBM computer, it isn't going to happen. Or to use another illustration, according to evolution, mutations are your basic material with which evolution operates. And then these good mutations are weeded out through natural selection, even though good mutations are incredibly rare in number. It would be much easier to win at Lotto than it would be for one good mutation to occur for evolution to happen. Well, can you imagine taking a computer, firing bullets at a computer, and hoping that the computer is going to improve? Well, of course it isn't. And likewise, our human body, especially the brain, is not going to improve as we are bombarded with radiation from space, as well as man-made radiation, and it's so unlikely to think that we are going to improve as a result, that we're going to mutate and evolve into something better. No, the brain is incredible. If somebody has to be behind a Macintosh or Apple or IBM computer or what have you, somebody must have been behind the brain, especially the human brain. Well, the brain has various other senses that feed into it, though, besides the eye. In fact, speaking of the eye, Charles Darwin admitted that to suppose that the eye, with all of its contrivances, could have been formed by evolution seems, I freely confess, absurd to the highest degree. The eye, our best sense, didn't happen by accident, and neither did another sense happen by accident either. And that concerns the ears. As any expert in anatomy and physiology will tell you, the ear is incredible. It is remarkable. No microphone has ever been built that can duplicate what the ear can do. If I were to tell you that this microphone just happened, that it was just an accident, you would say again that I was joking with you, and I would be once again. Well, how is it that many fine, sincere people tell us that even though the ear is much more complicated than the microphone, how can they tell us that the ear just happened by chance or by accident? Again, it's utterly absurd, isn't it? Yet, according to the theory of evolution, there is a rather interesting explanation as to how your ears originated. Here we have a toy crocodile. And this illustrates for us, according to the modern theory of evolution, how the ear came to be. According to evolution, 7 pieces of bone, which make up a reptilian jaw, from these 7 pieces of bone, 3 of them found their way back to one side, 3 of them found their way back to the other side, and reached the right size, shape, and location to become the hammer, anvil, and stirrup bones of the inner ear. Again, the chance of this happening would be absolutely astronomical, wouldn't they? And yet, this is the kind of faith that is necessary to believe in the theory of evolution. You can't prove creation by God scientifically, but you can't prove evolution either. For something to be a scientific fact, it has to be observable, repeatable, testable, and falsifiable. This isn't the case with either creation or evolution. You have to decide for yourself which one tends to make the most sense. Many fine people believe in evolution. But then again, unknown to the public, a great many brilliant scientists believe in creation as well. And it's this miracle of the ear and how it could not possibly have come from a reptilian jaw that we have another example as to why so many people think creation does make more sense. Well, moving right along though, the brain, the eye, the ear, and everything else in our human bodies, well, they're made up of billions of tiny cells. Here we have a microscope, and it is only with a microscope that we are capable of seeing the billions of tiny cells that make up our human bodies. Scientists tell us that there are at least 200 billion cells in our human bodies of about 200 different types. And each one is incredibly complicated. We're told that each cell of our body is about as simple as the entire city of New York. Well, New York isn't very simple, is it? New York is incredibly complicated, and so is each and every one of the cells of our body. In fact, there's a brilliant, witty evolutionary scientist and astrophysicist named Sir Dr. Frederick Hoyle. Now, I don't think he's any relative of mine, but Sir Dr. Frederick Hoyle is considered to be the world's greatest evolutionary astrophysicist, and he's a brilliant mathematician. And yet, even though he believes in evolution, Sir Dr. Frederick Hoyle says that the chances of living things evolving in this universe of ours are astronomical. He says they would be a 1 out of 1 with 40,000 zeros after it. Now, those are some real odds, aren't there? Again, you might as well try and bet on Lotto and hope to win at that, compared to the odds of life evolving by accident. Every cell of our body must have been created by a masterful engineer who knew what he was doing. In fact, Sir Dr. Frederick Hoyle says that the chances of life evolving by accident would be comparable to the chances of a tornado in a junkyard building a Boeing 747. A few months ago, I was sharing this with some Boeing engineers. My full-time ministry is speaking on the subject of the Bible and science in churches and schools and colleges around the country, but especially here in the Pacific Northwest. But at any rate, I was sharing this with some Boeing engineers, and they were understandably rather perturbed to think that somebody would imply that their marvelous airplane, which it certainly is, their marvelous 747 could have happened by chance or by accident, especially through a tornado in a junkyard. And you know, they're absolutely right. The odds of something like this happening would be astronomical. But folks, our universe is much more complicated than any 747. If somebody has to have made the 747, somebody must have made the universe. And that somebody, of course, would have to be a creator. And Christians know him to be God, a God who created us and also cares about us and wants to win us back to himself. Well, much more could be said about each cell of our body because they are so incredible and they are so remarkable. May I share with you just one more illustration as to how true science always agrees with God's Word. Harvard evolutionary biologist Edwin Conklin, even though he is an evolutionary scientist, Conklin nevertheless admitted a few years back that the chances of life evolving by accident would be comparable to the chances of an explosion in a printing shop producing an unabridged Webster's Dictionary. Now, that's not going to happen, is it? And yet, he is saying that it would be easier for this to happen than it would be for one single living cell to evolve by itself. Again, folks, true science would seem to indicate that there's a creator, wouldn't it? It isn't science versus the Bible or science versus Christianity or creation. True science, sooner or later, points to a creator, points to the fact that there has to have been an engineer behind the marvels of our universe. But we need to move on and talk about America's favorite subject. I think it's rather unfortunate that it is America's favorite subject, but from what I see on television and what I see on commercials and what have you, it seems to be that way. That concerns sex. In most public schools, evolution is taught as a fact, period. And of course, I don't mind at all evolution being taught in our schools because it is a perfectly respectable theory. But it is not a proven fact. And yet, in most public schools, it is taught as if it is proven, as if it is a fact. If it were taught in our public schools strictly as a theory, and if the good about it were taught as well as the bad about it, I wouldn't have any real problem. But, regrettably, this doesn't seem to be the case from my experience in general. For example, when you look at the origin of sex, we have a serious problem here facing the theory of evolution. There are a great many evolutionary scientists that we could quote for you to indicate this point. George Williams, for example, is an evolutionary biologist. And he will tell you that, frankly, folks, that at first glance and second and third, the origin of sex is very difficult to explain by an evolutionary process. I mean, after all, why did sex even get started in the first place? Sexual reproduction is extremely complicated, and it's very, very unreliable. From an evolutionary standpoint, natural selection would actually go against the origin of sexual reproduction. It would have been far simpler for human beings to continue to either clone themselves or somehow reproduce themselves as other creatures do, in an asexual fashion, not a bisexual fashion. Well, so already we have a problem with the origin of sex itself, but after we have male and female, we have another problem, and that concerns, well, the sexes keeping up with each other. It's a well-known evolutionary problem as to just exactly how did men and women keep evolving at the same rate. Indeed, during the 19th century, ladies, this is an unfortunate fact, but it's history, that according to evolution, women were thought to be inferior to men. And this is, in fact, one of the reasons why women were not allowed to vote in our country until 1920. They were considered to be evolutionarily backward. Well, this is really rather ironic, because another segment of Miracles of Nature that we'll share with you will show you how that, in fact, if you look at the morphology or the shape of the female skull as opposed to the male skull, male skulls, I'm afraid, look a good deal more primitive than female skulls do. So if anybody is more advanced, at least in terms of so-called evolution and in appearances, we'd have to say, frankly, the women look better than the men do.